Good afternoon and welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy, and today we have a very special show for you. We're calling it The Centennial Show, and it's all centennial all throughout the show. We're going to do six segments to introduce you to some of the very cool things that are happening as Anchorage celebrates 100 years. And that includes, as I said, all things centennial. We've got the book, the film, the theater productions, the cemetery tour, and much more. So we hope you'll listen through and kind of get a good introduction to the way Anchorage is celebrating its 100 years. We're going to start with Charles Wolforth, who's in the studio with me. He's responsible for the book. Hi, Charles. Welcome.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Now, Charles and I, you know, are co-hosts of Hometown Alaska, so we're kind of smirking about the fact that we're across from each other. And I'm interviewing Charles, and he wanted water before. He wanted the full guest treatment.
Yeah, I don't see why I should get any less than anyone else. Come on.
Get your own water, Charles. But anyway, you have tribute of producing this book for the centennial celebration. It's beautiful. It's called From the Shores of Ship Creek, Stories of Anchorage's First 100 Years. And how did this book become your project?
Well, I think that the folks who were putting together the centennial wanted to have some products that would last, that would be more than just a one-year thing. And so they commissioned the book, a movie, and a website. And Todd Hardesty did the movie. I think you're talking to him later.
We're going to talk with Todd. There's a centennial cabin art show. I mean, there's just all kinds
right.
of stuff. The creativity just poured out, so...
So there was funding from the municipality and the Rasmussen Foundation that went through the Alaska Humanities Forum, and the forum put out a call for authors, and I was selected with my concept to write the book. And then in very short order, I had to get this thing produced and come up with the photos, which I got tremendous help from the Alaska Dispatch in allowing me to just dig through their catalog of pictures. And Jim Lovakis contributed this fabulous picture on the cover and the very funny picture of
great.
A moose on the back.
Yeah, good old Jim Lovakis photos. Mm-hmm. You know, in addition to us being both on the same show,
right.
there's something else different about this show that I have to tell our audience. You can't call. This is a pre-recorded show. So no calls at all. You'll just have to listen to our beautiful voices. And if you have questions, email them and we'll get back to you about them. But we won't have any calls during this show. So at any rate, how long did the book take? And you organized it around people that made it seem very accessible. Was that your idea to do it that way?
Well, I wrote the book basically over the course of a winter, so it took about, 7 or 8 months, which would have been, the winter of 13-14.
Mm-hmm.
You can write a history about any place by saying what happened first, what happened next,
chronology.
Who was the first one to get there, why was it named the way it was named. You could write that about a bus stop, right? It's not interesting.
And it doesn't stick with you.
Right. Mm-hmm. I think what's interesting is stories, and stories are about people and what they did and why were they in a place. So I decided to orient each of the periods of Anchorage history around an individual who wouldn't necessarily be the most important or historic person in that time, but would be someone with whom the reader could somehow identify and feel like through their life you were seeing what happened in that period. And it was interesting, learning about these people was one of the most rewarding part of the books, and finding them was interesting too, because I didn't want to only write about people I already knew about.
Right, because people might glaze over and say, oh yeah, no, I kind of know that story. I found that I was finding out things that I didn't know, and that also the style is warm and personal. I don't know, it's like reading about people you know because of the way you did the research and the way you tell the story. Where did you get your information? I know that you have a nice section in the back of the book per chapter, so if people want to drill down, this is another good aspect of the book. They can get references to other good books that you drew from or a piece that you drew from. But were you at the National Archives? Where were you getting all your newspapers? Where were you?
Well, it depends what period you're talking about, because the sources are so different for what's happening now and what happened 100 years ago. In figuring out who these 14 characters were going to be, some of them I knew right off. Others I got by putting together some public forums where I invited people to come and talk about who they thought would fit for each of those periods.
So you crowdsourced.
I did, and I invited all the local historians, and then just other members of the public were there, and I got some of the very best suggestions in the book. Nellie Brown, who I think was one of the most remarkable and charming people.
Had the most fun in Anchorage of anybody.
Mm-hmm. Had the most fun of anybody, and her friend is still here Mary Berry and has all of Nellie and Sidney Lawrence's photos, you know, mm-hmm. and so I was able to really tell that story very personally. And so mm-hmm. I went and interviewed Mary, and I did a lot of work in the National Archives while they're still here in Anchorage.
Which is sad that they're not here. Yeah.
And tons of stuff that really pulls you right down to the moment, like the journals that Jack Brown made. He was the first forest guard who was here in 1913, before 1912, before the town was started. Mm-hmm. And, you know, here's his handwritten notes about exploring Chester Creek, exploring Ship Creek, and finding, you know, laying out stakes for where the town was going to be.
Yeah. I did not know that the Chugach National Forest went right down to the water and that there was a huge fight over. I did not know that. I mean, I remember hearing stories of how Chugach State Park got to be, but I did not know that battle royale that went on between the Forest Service and I forget who. The Alaska Engineering Commission. Yeah.
Which was the Interior Department. Yeah. NOAA, Chugach National Forest included all of Anchorage Bowl, all the way up to the Matanuska Glacier and the Matanuska River and all of Kenai Peninsula. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the funny stories, was finding out about how prostitution was a big part of getting rid of the national forest.
The
Engineering Commission moved the prostitutes into an area where they couldn't be moved, and the National Forest was too embarrassed to kick them out. Or to just make an exclusion right around them. So that was why they excluded the whole bowl from the National Forest.
What a great story. Who knows that story? Nobody knows that
story. Well, it's a confidential memo that was in the National Archives, and a previous book I was working on, my research assistant, the late Wendy Foyer, found the confidential memo that laid out the whole argument for why they did that.
Wow. It makes me kind of proud of Anchorage. It's got a colorful history.
Indeed.
It's more colorful than I realized. So let's just touch on, you know, there's a person for each chapter. We can't tell the listeners all of them, but maybe let's do two or three and why you chose them.
Well, I mentioned Nellie Brown. Mm-hmm. She was a Yak, so Alaska Native, the first person to live in Anchorage, essentially. Loved, fun-loving, always doing stuff, always taking pictures.
Of herself, all dressed up.
Of herself, loved dressing, loved going out. And one thing that her friend Mary Berry told me that I found very poignant was, she said, well, she went to bars every night. I thought, wow, is she an alcoholic? And Mary said, no. In those days, natives couldn't go to the social clubs, which were the main part of social life in Anchorage.
They were private social clubs?
Like the Elks Club, the mm-hmm. Moose, you know, the
Lodge.
Different lodges.
Mm-hmm.
Nor could many, you know, Norwegians, Scandinavians, they were also excluded. There was quite a history of racism in Anchorage that I tried to show in the book. And so essentially Mary had to go to the bars because that was the only place she could go to meet her friends. Hmm. And so she was a fascinating character. I thought like Locke Jacobs was an amazing character. He was this shoe clerk who became a multi-millionaire in the oil business. And through some skullduggery and through just some really clever, aggressive work during the middle of an oil boom. So
what years does he represent for you?
Well, I mean, his main stuff is the 1950s when the oil was being found on the mm-hmm. Swanson River. I think mm-hmm. it was 1957 is when that discovery was made. Mm-hmm. And then there was the development of it and the whole controversy about whether they'd be able to drill in the Kenai Moose Range, which is now the Kenai National Wildlife Refuge, and which was a very important factor in Alaska becoming a state, because prior to that, there was no idea how we would pay for being a state. It was only with the arrival of oil that there was any inkling, oh, well, there's a source of revenue, which kind of resonates today as we're looking at our loss of oil revenue. Oil's been what kept us going since 59 when we became a state.
Yeah. I mean, the resource extraction, and something I liked from the early chapters was people who were interested in exploiting those resources would paint these rosy pictures of everything that was possible and mm-hmm. how wonderful it was going to be. And it really isn't like that, you know? And so it's harder than you think. It's going to cost more money than you think. And we're still living with that today. I mean, Pebble Mine was sort of a story like that, you know?
Alaska Railroad itself was the original Build It and They Will Come project. It mm-hmm. was cost over $700 million. Over $70 million at a time when the federal budget was $700 million. So mm-hmm. it cost 10% of the entire federal budget. Mm-hmm. And it was a railroad to nowhere. I mean, there was nothing
the
there.
The original railroad to
and,
nowhere.
And until World War II, you know, it was the number one industry in the rail belt of Alaska. In other words, it was the main employer and it was the source of transportation. Without the railroad, the towns would have disappeared. And it was all funded by congressional appropriations.
Wow.
It had no, you know, it... like something like 90% of its budget at one time was covered by by the federal taxpayer.
It's amazing when you read in the early years about how many decisions were at the federal level. I mean, I guess a territory, of course, you expect that. But I mean, the fighting and Wilson and Taft and all of those people, it was just really fun to read about that. But I want to leap to, I'm going to go to the final chapter where you have our two Anchorage-born mayors. And I enjoyed that chapter. Tell me about writing that chapter. Was it fun?
Right. Well, Mayor Sullivan is almost Anchorage-born. He was born, I think, in Nenana or Fairbanks, but came to Anchorage as a very young boy.
Okay.
So I thought it was legitimate to talk to him and talk about Mark Begich, who was born in Anchorage, as sort of the first, second-generation mayors. And I've known them both for a very long time, and we all know that they're very vigorous adversaries who sort of...
But the products of our public schools, churches, everything, and
they're
yet
very,
they're...
Very much so, from different parts of town, but mostly basically from working class backgrounds and both educated here and in some ways very similar, in some ways Punch and Judy, But they... But what I found in talking to them is they say almost the exact same words as to what their vision for the town
is. Quality of life.
What they're trying to accomplish and where they think we're going. And really all they disagree with is on the means of how to get there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really been true of our mayors, going back to Rick Maestrom forward and maybe even with the sort of Tom Fink maybe had a slightly different view. But going all the way back to unification almost, we've been on this road of saying, hey, Anchorage needs to be a great place to live, and that's how we're going to make it.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's true.
So it's nice to think about because we think a lot about conflict, but in fact, we have quite a consensus.
Right. I remember reading you said Anchorage, the people of Anchorage want to get along.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
We're out here on a limb. We really do need each other, and, that's
part of
it.
And I don't think our voters really like negativity and conflict. Mm-hmm. I think they really would prefer to see folks work things out.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's interesting. I wanted to ask you, what did you learn that you didn't know? What surprised you? What were you shaking your head over?
I learned a lot. I mean, one chapter that I found really interesting to work on was the chapter about diversity. Anchorage has become, in total, not more diverse than other cities, but in terms of our neighborhoods and our schools, extremely diverse. In fact, the most diverse neighborhoods and schools in the country. And looking at the reasons for that, and I spent some time with demographers from the Department of Labor who really helped me develop data and get some answers. And One reason is because we have sort of a 10% turnover in population, and so new people are coming in, and it's a really great place to live. So the most ambitious people in the country are immigrants, and so they're coming here.
Mm-hmm.
Another answer is our very poor community planning, interestingly.
Uh-huh.
So in other places where they have very good planning, the rich people are over here and the poor people are over here.
And
Anchorage are all mixed together.
Which is a good thing, mm-hmm. which gives us a vitality that is missing in some of those other communities.
And another factor is our schools of choice. So because we have these schools of choice, we don't have a big private school system.
Mm-hmm.
So the whites still go to the same schools as the minorities.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're all sort of together in this big pot. And I think it's very much an Anchorage story that we have managed to do that sort of by accident, but it worked out. People get along.
All right. Well, Charles, we're out of time, but I want to thank you so much. And I do encourage people to pick this book up. It's very interesting. You read about the places you walk and the people, the history you know or don't know and wish you did know. This is a great chance to really feel like you know your hometown. So I just want to thank you, Charles, for taking the time and to be the guest and let me be the host this time. And thank you for coming on Hometown Alaska.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Our fair city turns 100 this year, and we took to the streets to hear your answers to one question. Why do you make Anchorage your home?
I love Anchorage, man, because I've been here for a while now, 15 years strong, and there's a strong sense of community here.
Even though it's a big city, it has a small town feel, but you're not up in everybody's business.
Basically, it's a place to be right now. It's a place that's popping, and it's a place that's going to continue to uprise here.
So I love being able to go to the grocery store and see my high school history teacher, or to go to the library and see a friend that has recently had children that I haven't seen in a couple of years. I love being able to connect with people that I have known my whole life and to meet new people too.
The diversity of things to do and just the experience of living in a major metropolitan area this close to wildlife and wilderness.
I love living in Anchorage because it's an incredible place to be a performing artist. It's an incredible place to be a cultural interpreter, a cultural representative. It's a great place to raise children.
Oh God, it's a wonderful place to live. It's got cultural events.
It's a great municipality.
It's a wonderful place to recreate.
It's got great performing arts centers.
There's things to do during the wintertime. There's things to do in the summertime.
It's got a lot of incredible things to do every day, every week.
Wildlife living in Anchorage, it's a great place to raise a family and kids.
You just heard from Michael Estrella, Natasha Price, Doug Vincent Lang, and Steven Alvarez. They told their stories to Alaska Public Media video producer John Norris at the 2014 Alaska Federation of Natives Convention in October.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy, and we finished up our first segment with Charles Wolforth, and now we're going to talk with Todd Hardesty, the maker of the legacy film Anchorage Is, which was a big part of the centennial. This program is a little different from our regular Hometown Alaskas. We're not taking calls during the centennial show, but we're hoping to give you all you need to know to go out and enjoy Anchorage's 100th birthday. So, Todd, welcome to Hometown Alaska.
Hey, it's great to be here. Thank you.
Great to have you. Todd is a former TV journalist, and then he became an entrepreneur, and he is the owner of Alaska Video Postcards. And he and John Larson got together on this project. John was the writer and narrator for Anchorage Is.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to let our listeners know that we will have links on our website to how you can order this. You can also go to the city's website. There's places where you can find it. So, Todd, I've got a couple of questions about the show. My goal is to make people want to go and watch it if they haven't already seen it. So I thought I would start with, must have been a little daunting to get, how are we going to get 100 years into a little bit of over an hour? What went through your head?
It was 30 years that I've been kind of either in the news business or the documentary business trying to tell them out in Alaska. This was perhaps the most difficult.
I think so.
Because we were trying to do, we were trying to put into this time capsule the history, but we were more trying to capture the character of the location and the people. And we had people coming to us and saying, well, you cannot forget Captain Cook and that time period, and clearly you can't forget the Athabascan Tenaina who were here, and maybe the Chugach Eskimos who came through, and
yeah.
Certainly you can't forget all of the major activities and the major events and the not only the current ones, the Iditarod and people like Keegan Randall and
the Olympians.
You can't forget the massive growth during World War II, and you can't forget the earthquake, and you can't forget the people like Sidney Lawrence, and all of these characters that were here, and the list was just a longer list than you could put in any kind of a documentary.
More than a lifetime.
So I literally, just in the formulation of it, was having a conversation with a friend who, when I asked him and said, how would you finish that sentence, Anchorage is, ... And immediately he said, opportunity. And I thought about it, and I asked other people, and they would come up with the greatest place to, they would finish that sentence, and
mm-hmm.
I thought, that's what we're going to try to capture here.
Mm.
We're not going to effectively document 100 years of history and 1,000 years of prehistory.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we're going to do is we're going to try to say, these are the people who came here, these are the people who are here, here are some of the events that shaped us, and here are some of the people who shaped the events.
Mm-hmm.
But that in 100 years, when someone watches it, okay, and they watch it and they say, what were the people of Anchorage in the year of 2015? What were they like? That I think the legacy Anchorage Is has captured that.
Mm-hmm.
This is something that in a century, people can say, yeah, we get it.
We got the flavor. We got the mm-hmm. flavor. Did the city have any ambitions for this film other than, or did they just say, hey, Todd, do your best? Or did
unfortunately
they say,
and fortunately, no, they did not, really. And that was the good fortune we had as producers.
Uh-huh.
We said, hey, the task in front of us is daunting, but it's also refreshing because no one's telling us what to do. And throughout the course of it, the person we reported to was Nina Kempel, and Nina was not the
Humanities
city.
Forum, yeah.
Exactly. And David Holthaus, who was the person I directly worked with occasionally, and Susan Duck with the Centennial Commission. Those three people were the ones that were kind of intersecting with it. And luckily for us, there was never anything like, you must do this, or you must have this, you must have that, period.
Yeah, that's great.
And throughout the whole process, so we were able to make our own decisions and come up with what we came up with, and based on the standing ovations and all the many happy faces of people who thanked us with tears after seeing them Beartooth.
I mean, there were so many people
we had that came up to us and said that just it ringed ringed a chord within the reason they came here, the reason they are here.
Yeah,
it didn't necessarily capture everyone's wishes for a complete history. I mean, we didn't mention so many things, but that wasn't the point.
Right. I was there at the Beartooth at the premiere. It was packed. People were very excited. I think there was some Centennial stuff out in the lobby that you could get. And I remember you gave a talk before the program, and you showed more photographs that weren't even in the film. And why did you do that? And it made me think he really loved this project. He had to do the movie, but there's more he wants to tell us about. So what was that little talk about?
I think that I developed a passion in this process for things, some of the minutia and some of the things that as my co-producer John Larson said, Todd said we can't get stuck in the small things.
Okay? John would say that.
Yeah, we said, because I was like, hey, okay, Billy Burke was the actress in the first silent movie shown on July 5th, 1916 at the Empress Theater. We should do something about Billy Burke. And John's like, Billy Burke? I go, yeah, she became the Good Witch of the North in Wizard of Oz.
Oh, no.
And she, or he, John, and then Terrence Cole, the historian, just look at me and go, Billy Burke? And I go, yeah, Billy Burke. And they were, no Billy Burke. But what you're talking about my fascination is that I read about it, and Cap Lathrop brought up this movie that for one time showing for his premiere event at the Empress, July 5th, 1916. He came out to a standing ovation. People were, he was humble, but at least in the newspaper descriptions, but said a few kind words, and then they showed this movie to someone playing a piano at the Empress Theater.
So rich.
And so I found so many pictures that never made it into the documentary, but they were a race, July 4th, 1917, about the same location where the current museum at the Rasmussen Center is located. But they used to have a ball field. That was where the baseball field was located.
Right.
And we had baseball games as early as 1916 at that ball field, but we had baseball as early as 1915 down in the mudflats of Ship Creek. It's like, well, I found pictures of the location at Ship Creek prior to it becoming the baseball field, and what it was stumps.
Yeah.
And prior to stumps, I found a picture that says first sawmill in Anchorage, and it's down there in the mudflats at Ship Creek.
Wow. That's amazing. You know, we just tend to, the slice we're living through, we think somehow that's the way it always was. And, it wasn't like that at all. And also, you know, something as American as baseball. I mean, it's vital today, and it was very vital then, even in the territorial days. I mean,
yeah, and picture that it's if you were to, I love a characterization about the people who were living here in 1915, 16, 17, 18, that time period. And the characterization in the newspaper, and it was something like this. It said, with the exception of the Foreign Legion, nowhere in the world are so many nationalities represented than Anchorage, Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because people had come here for work, and they'd come here from Europe, or Europeans who'd come to Alaska for looking for work, but they came here from all sorts of places.
Eastern Europe.
And so these guys playing baseball may not even be able to speak English.
Yeah.
But they could maybe play ball.
Play a good game.
And they could communicate.
Yeah.
The Potter Field, there was Potter Section House was one of the workstations. And I saw an early picture of the train that people had taken from downtown out to Potter to watch a baseball game.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so funny. I never saw that. One more question. I thought about audiences, and I thought, how did you envision your audience? I mean, it's everybody who lives here, but then the people who live here, there's a lot of different kinds of people that live here. There's young people, there's, you know, people with an historical memory. How did you think about your audience?
It was and in my particular case, the way I produce is that I think oftentimes, what would I like?
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
what will tickle me?
Yeah, what's interesting? Because if I can find a passion in something, then communicate that passion, that interest, and that love of a subject, then whether you are particularly interested in that, you might not be, but you might be interested that I'm interested so much that
the
heart and my...
The universality of people who are passionate
exactly,
about what they're doing or grasping for something.
It's like, now, one of the things that did happen, you know, I get on these things, it's like, and the common joke besides Billy Burke was the Anchorage for Rendezvous, which I learned was actually started in 1936, which the Rondi history book, in their history book, they started their history in 1935.
Ooh, whoops.
Whoops. And I would continually bring that up to John and others, and they always said, doesn't really make a difference. And I said, I think it does.
Stickler for facts. Hey, what would you have liked to live through? A baseball game in 1950 or what?
That's a great question. I think that what would I like to have lived through? I think that it would have been really interesting to head out to Lake Spinard with Joe Spinard after he cut his road through U.S. Forest Service property.
Because you can do anything.
And built his pavilion illegally and changed the name of Jeter Lake to Spinard Lake to match his own name. That would have been interesting.
A great time to be here.
That would have been very interesting to be on that. I mean, again, it's not significant, but it's lasted.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Most people don't know him, but they everyone knows the name.
Yes, and Spinard Road and Spinard Lake and Joe
and
Spinard.
The reason that road is so curvy, I mean, Spinard Road is one of the only curvy roads in town.
Anchorage,
well, it's because Joe Spinard and Lions Club or one of those kinds of organizations helped him cut this road through, you know, muskegon trees and whatever, so it naturally had to curve.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Well, Todd, on that note, we have to leave. I want to thank you so much for coming in and remind people that they'll be able to see Anchorage is in local gift shops.
Yep,
very soon,
and
you can order your own copy or order a copy. I bet you Christmas will be a big time too.
It's like, and it celebrates our existence and our legacy, and it really is a celebration. And I think that's if you want to celebrate your if you want a good hour of celebration,
you'll
meet some interesting people and afterwards be happy you live here. And if you don't live here, you're listening. You'll be happy that we're your neighbor.
Yeah, yeah, and you can feel connected. You can still feel connected to that 100 years of history. Well, thank you, Todd Hardesty.
Hey, thank you.
We're going to take a quick break. Anchorage is celebrating its centennial this year, but the area has been inhabited for centuries longer by the Dena'ina, who still live in the area today. Anchorage reporter Ann Hillman spoke with Dena'ina historian Aaron Leggett about the area's past and its future. I'm Kathleen McCoy. Stay with us.
For centuries, the Dena'ina of Aklutna started their fishing season in the spring at what's now the heavily industrialized area of Ship Creek near modern-day downtown Anchorage.
If times were getting tough in the spring when you're in that kind of transitional period, and maybe your winter supply of salmon didn't last, that you could go to Dagaitnu.
That's the Dena'ina name for the area, says tribal member and historian Aaron Leggett.
And catch the three-spine stickleback, so not a very big fish. You know, they grow to maybe 3 or 4 inches. So they must have been catching them by the tens of thousands, and then they would make a soup and a broth, particularly from that.
But in 1915, a group of settlers built a tent city right where the Dena'ina fished. Leggett says his people adapted. They found work on the railroad and focused their efforts on other traditional fishing sites, like Point Warrensoff.
How adventurous do you want to be?
Aaron Leggett walks down the ice-encrusted trail to the beach and looks out over the water.
100 years ago, when Dena'ina was the predominant language spoken here, this is Nu-Chish-Tunt, a place protected from the wind.
Dena'ina came to the area every spring and early summer to fish in the silty waters for king and silver salmon. They fished across Kinnick Arm, too, and off of Fire Island. North of Ship Creek, they set up a type of wooden scaffolding over the mudflats so they could harvest salmon even when the tides went out. But the local Dena'ina were forced to give up another favored fishing spot when the U.S. military took over Point Woronzoff during the Cold War. So what remains of the fish camps? Leggett says not much, and what is there he wants left alone.
We do know of some things that were left behind, but we don't like to talk specifically about what they were just because of concerns of looting and that sort of thing, but nothing really that I could say specifically.
So is the area still important for the Dena'ina people?
I guess to me, you know, the connection is that despite airplanes flying overhead.
And the parking lot and the windmills and the lack of trees, the ocean is still the same. Leggett says that many people more often visit other places, like Aklutna Lake, to find spiritual connections. But all of the Anchorage Bowl is part of their homeland. It's where they hunted caribou and gathered berries in the summer. He says it's something that many people, even other Alaska natives, used to forget.
Today now, you know, if I say I'm Dena'ina, most people, or a lot of people, will say, oh, well, you guys are the Indians that used to live here. And I say, well, we're still here, but at least you recognize that we used to be here, because I don't know, for some reason, maybe because Anchorage is always looking to the future, it was like it was an empty cultural vacuum.
But Leggett says that's starting to change in Anchorage as the Dena'ina themselves continue to reawaken to their own culture and educate others. In Anchorage, I'm Ann Hillman.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. Today's show is all about the Anchorage Centennial. We're not taking phone calls, so it's a little different than our usual program, but let's move on into our next segment. With me in the studio now, we have Audrey and Bruce Kelly. You may know them. They're responsible for the Centennial Tour, which has an interesting bit of history about how it began, but it's also flowered into a special Centennial event this year. So, Audrey, tell us a little bit about how the tours got started, and we want to pay tribute to John Bagoy.
Oh, absolutely, because we wouldn't have cemetery tours today, I don't think, if it weren't for John Bagoy. He buried his mother in the cemetery in 1980 at a time that it had fallen into great disrepair. And John took it upon himself, because his family was buried there, to do everything he could to reclaim the cemetery. And through his efforts, he discovered who was actually buried there and found out that there was a lot of history to share with Anchorage, and began giving tours of the cemetery in the mid-1990s.
Right.
Bruce and I continued. We took over his project of doing the 21st Solstice Tour.
When did you guys begin?
We started with John in 2003.
Sort of partnering.
Yeah, and then after he died in 2005, we just carried on, and we've loved carrying on his tradition of the June 21st Solstice Tour.
So normally you do one a summer?
One a summer, normally.
Normally, but this is a special year.
Well, not only is this a special year, but 5 years ago, because the June 21st tour was so popular, we were asked to add two tours. The two other tours became very special. We asked Linda Benson to join us, and we did the biographies that Bruce and I had previously prepared for the John Bagoy Solstice Tour. Well, Linda Benson adapts them into a first-person account to be presented by costumed actors standing at the grave sites, one in July and one tour in August.
So it evolved a while ago into this, John's
yes.
traditional tour, and then I think it's called Stories at the Cemetery.
Stories at the Cemetery.
With actors and story. Okay. So let's jump in, Bruce, to this summer. What's going on? We have a couple of special things going on.
Well, we're starting off as normal with the June 21st tour, which is more of a lecture format. And this year we're doing 10 significant people that shaped the formation of Anchorage in the 100-year anniversary that we're celebrating. We're going from the early 1915 tent city right up to pretty much modern day. In fact, we've got Wally Hickel we're going to do this year.
And Wally, well, I are there a few names you want to throw out here for the centennial tour? We've got Wally. Who else do you have that people might go, oh, my gosh, I got to go see that?
Oh, well, we got Leopold David, the first mayor of Anchorage. We're also doing something on Chief Izai, the Dena'ina chieftain that was here at the time Anchorage was formed also. And it's important to realize that there was a tent city here long before our tent city that we celebrate because they had a summer fishing camp for many years.
The tent city before tent city.
The tent city before tent city, yes. So we'll be talking about him.
Uh-huh.
And then we're going to be talking about Elmer Rasmussen. And
these are all names we all hear. So, yeah, we'll want to...
We got 10 of them. And Tony Diamond and...
So there's one character that's going... He'll be in the centennial tour on the 21st, but he'll continue on into the second tour you're doing this.
Yes.
This is Wally Hickel, right?
Yes.
And that is, the dates are July 12 and August 9, the same tour. But this is called, go ahead and tell us.
Well, the July 12 tour and August 9 tour, they're called Stories at the Cemetery 15 for 2015 plus a leg.
All right. And so Wally will be in that tour. Throw out a few names of the other people in that tour.
Well, Martha White will be repeating some of the tours from previous story tours. We will be redoing McLuton Annie. A new one we'll be talking about is Ramona Barnes.
Wow, I remember Ramona.
Yes,
I was
here
when Ramona was a force. Yes.
I think she was quite a force. I think a lot of Alaska does remember her.
Yes.
Let's see.
Miss Wiggles?
Miss Wiggles,
yes. Oh, my gosh.
The contortionist that performed for many years.
So we have politicians, we have athletic characters, we've got it all here in the tour. So, well, we are out of time. This is so hard to brush through this. But let's throw those dates out. The 21st is the traditional.
June 21st.
June 21. And then July 12 and August 9 are the special 15 for 2015 and a leg.
And a leg.
Which is just focused on our centennial.
And all three are free to the public.
Free, that's important to know.
Yes.
So thank you, Bruce and Audrey Kelly, for coming in and sharing a little bit about the centennial tour at the cemetery.
Thank you, Kathleen.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 9 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Hometown Alaska on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. And in the studio with me right now is Sandy Harper from Cyrano's Theater Company. And she's here because she has a very special centennial project. It's called Anchorage, the First 100 Years, a Theatrical Tour. So, Sandy, I just love the idea of this. It's a decade a week for 10 weeks.
That's right.
Now, where did this idea come from?
Well, we knew we wanted to do something for the centennial. The theater is located in the 1915 building. 1915 building?
Whoa,
how perfect is that?
That is perfect.
And at first I wanted to honor all the mayors. I thought that would be a good
prism. Place to begin, yeah.
Yeah, and especially because my husband's stepfather was Zach Lusak, and he was mayor twice. But then as it evolved, it would be fun to do a different decade every week. You know, very ambitious. But I thought we could do it because of the training Alaskan actors get at the Last Frontier Theater Conference. Mm-hmm. They got to be right there. They got to work fast.
Mm-hmm.
And it's working.
So basically, people are taking 10 years, and they're going to pack that into, a 30-minute or an hour?
Well, no, actually, it'll be two full acts, 45 minutes each.
Okay, so two
full acts. With an intermission.
Okay.
And the organizing success principle of theater are the people involved. It's the people, and it's a collaboration, this synergy.
Right.
And we have gathered together an extraordinary group of people who we're calling curators slash the writers.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, we have a director and the cast, and we also have consultants.
Mm-hmm.
Charles Wolforth is one of our consultants, and of course, he's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And Katie Rungsworth is.
Okay. So I have to tell you that the thing I love about this the most is being able to sit in the theater, having a glass of wine, and getting my Anchorage history 10 years at a time. It just sounds like so much fun. And also, they'll be different because each curator is going to approach this project from
absolutely
their own creativity.
Uniquely.
Yeah.
Uniquely.
So, So what I want to do, we cannot go through all 10 because we're doing just an overview here, but and I know many of them are still in progress, even as we speak, like you said.
That's true.
That people have to move fast. So let's talk about three that you're ready to talk about right now.
Sure, I'd be happy to do that. Now, sort of the theme is a living newspaper. And so what we're featuring are the headlines of the day and the colorful people who help shape Alaska. I mean, Anchorage, of course.
Of course. Well, we're doing the birthday of Anchorage.
But I will tell you about three that are absolutely fantastic. Of course, they all are fantastic. But the first one that opens on July 1 is called The Rest is History. Anchorage becomes a town in 1915. The 20s are roaring, and we're becoming a film capital of the far north. Because it's all about the backstories of making the film Chuchaco.
Mm-hmm.
And they are absolutely fascinating. And we have all kinds of footage, too, because our inspiration is Chris Behem, and he's passionate about culling this history. We have all kinds of authentic stuff.
Yeah.
It's going
okay,
to be amazing.
Let's do another one. What else
okay,
is it? What's
well,
coming up?
All right. Well, not next, but week 5 is a personal favorite because Leo Morgan is doing. You know who Leo is?
Oh, Leo, sure.
Fabulous. She wrote Good Time Girls, a wonderful historian. And hers is called Sex, Money, the Political Frontier, and the Boom That Went Bust.
Oh, this is going to pull him in, Sandy.
Yeah, we even have a map of all the bars in Anchorage.
And we have a colorful bar history.
We do.
One of our strongest history points.
We do. And you know, the one that's 1935, 1945, Bob Hope appeared at that time. It's called Fourth Avenue, the longest bar in the world.
Oh, wow. Because it's just bar after bar after bar.
Exactly.
Yeah. That sounds really fun. It'll be great to have Leo back in the state. Too, because I know she comes and goes. It's great.
Oh,
to
no,
have
she's it. Here now.
She's here now.
She's here now.
She edits a paper in Maine, doesn't she?
That's history.
Okay.
That's history.
That's some more
she
history.
She is back home.
Okay.
In fact, she's living in the neighborhood she came when she first came to Anchorage.
Wow. So
and,
let's do number three, just so.
Oh, okay. Well, okay. Number three is From Earthquake Devastation to Boomtown in a Madcap 10 Years. And that's Steve Heimel, familiar name to your listeners.
Sure.
And Jonah Herrick. And they have written a hilarious, very stylized a decade. A lot happened in that decade. And it's sort of, well, kind of about the oil industry, kind of about the Iditarod, because it started in those days, too.
Oh, that's a great decade. That's
it
a great
is.
Decade. They're all great decades, though,
they
right?
They are.
Right.
You know, the content is editing things down and making choices. It's
right.
not, oh, can we think of something else to do?
No, no, no. It's like we have to throw most of this out and let's take the best that we've got of that decade. Remember, it starts July 1. It goes for 10 weeks.
Yes, through September 6th.
And it's two full acts, you said,
exactly,
each one.
Exactly.
So lots of entertainment and lots of history in a very enjoyable environment.
Right.
And
then we have extra added attractions like the Antique Auto Mushers Club is going to park a vintage car of that decade in front
of
Cyrano.
So every week a different car.
Every week a different car.
Oh, Sandy, this is so much fun. I can't wait to go. And I have to say thank you so much for coming in and telling us a little bit about this so people know to watch for it and not miss it. So thank you, Sandy.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Welcome to VoxVan, a storytelling collaboration between Alaska Public Media and the Anchorage Museum. Our fair city turns 100 this year, and we took to the streets to hear your answers to one question. Why do you make Anchorage your home?
Most of the folks that I've met here in Alaska and here in Anchorage are out to enjoy life. That's their main thing. They're not out to impress somebody or out to achieve something particular, but they're out to enjoy life.
Honestly, the people are some of the heartiest and some of the coolest people I could ever meet.
What makes Anchorage home is Point Warren's off, popsicles, Echo, the chicken that lives next door.
The day I landed, I saw first time snow in my life. I love skiing. I learned skiing here before. I've never seen any snow in my life.
I saw a bear just 10 minutes from my house, and I live in the city. It's been wonderful to be so close to nature.
I really like skiing. skiing in Alaska.
This is home because I write science fiction, and when I came here, it was like I'd entered a fantasy world that I thought was only in my mind, with these amazing, dramatic mountains and interesting people and interesting history. And so I stay here because it inspires my writing.
It's not necessarily about the place that makes it home to me. It's my community here. It's every time I've had opportunities elsewhere, this place keeps drawing me back.
Why we love Anchorage, first and foremost, family. It's a good place to have your kids grow up. It's not the big city hustle and bustle, but at the same time, you can have your nightlife out here downtown. It's great outdoors, go fishing, beautiful, beautiful scenery. Come on, baby, help me out.
You just heard from Nancy Schaefer, Anthony Franklin, Jane Rabati, Ashok Misra, Lizzie Newell, Amy Devereaux, and Shane Lloyd. They told their stories to Alaska Public Media video producer Travis Gilmore at the Anchorage Museum.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. And in this segment, we have Jim Barnett, president of the Cook Inlet Historical Society. And we're going to talk about the deep dive into Anchorage's history. But just before we start, I just want to remind you, we don't have segments on these museum exhibits, but they're so fabulous. I don't want you to miss them. Home Field Advantage, Baseball in the Far North, here through November 1st, 2015. City Limits, which examines how Anchorage's global position shaped the community culturally and economically. It's four big galleries in the museum. It's here through October 11th, 2015. And of course, Arctic Ambitions, Captain Cook and the Northwest Passage, how he came to Alaska to explore the continental coast for the Northwest Passage. We have that through September 7th, 2015. So tuck those in your calendar book and don't miss them. So, Jim, welcome to Hometown Alaska.
Thank you. Thank you, Kathleen.
So happy to have you.
Thank you.
You have a huge symposium going on. It starts tomorrow night.
Yes.
And I'm calling it the deep dive into Anchorage history because you go back more than 100 years. You go back 250 years, right?
Right, exactly. So
let's talk about the first part of the symposium. It runs Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Yes.
So Thursday night, we're going to focus on Captain Cook.
We begin with a reception that Mayor Sullivan is hosting with the Sister Cities Commission and our society to celebrate the relationship with Whitby, England, which is a small coastal town on the North Sea that just happened to be the home of Captain Cook. And we all know Captain Cook came here in 1778 and was the first Westerner to observe the people of this area and to draw its first maps. And it's a pretty important encounter that allows us to know what the Dena'ina were like at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Whitby connection will be celebrated, and then we're going to, after we finish this reception with the mayor of Whitby.
So we have their mayor and we have our mayor?
Their mayor and
mayor
our mayor.
Mayor to mayor.
And
okay.
We hope the new mayor is coming too.
Okay,
and so we'll have mayors all over the place.
Side.
Yeah, well, that's right.
So there'll be that festive evening.
Yes.
And by the way, people can still register, come? Can they come
Absolutely.
Pay at the door?
They can register at the door. It's very inexpensive. It basically pays for the lunch on Saturday, and
okay.
I think they'll really enjoy the opportunity.
Okay.
It's been obviously supported by the Centennial Commission.
Mm-hmm. So let's take them to Friday. We're going to continue with the Captain Cook on Friday. So talk a little bit, 7 illustrated lectures. So tell us a little bit about that.
Well, the first one actually happens Thursday night after the reception. Sophie Forgan from the Captain Cook Museum in Whitby is also here. And she will speak Thursday night, and then we'll have 7 illustrated lectures like Sophie, so 8 in total, about Captain Cook and what the significance of this great explorer from 250 years ago, what the significance of all that means to us.
Okay.
And, of course, this is intended to support and help interpret the very outstanding exhibit that we have at the Anchorage Museum right now that you've already mentioned, Arctic Ambitions.
Right. Now, we changed tone a little bit on Saturday.
Yes.
So it feels a little more down home on Saturday.
Absolutely.
We're going to hear from local folks on Saturday. I see first up we have Growing Up in Anchorage with Bill Bittner, which sounds really fun.
The Bittner family is one of those families that's been here since the beginning. And Bill and Judy is the vice president of my board. They grew up in Anchorage. I don't want to tell you exactly how old they are because they may not want everybody to know, but they're my age.
They can tell some stories.
Yes. And so they can tell us what Anchorage was
like
in the
50s.
Yeah.
And then I love this, Coffee with the Mayors, Jack Roderick, Tom Fink, and Rick Maestrom. That should be pretty fun.
And more. We have had more. I mean, it's essentially every living mayor has decided to come.
Oh, that's fabulous.
And so we're going to have coffee with all these guys, and they're going to hopefully they won't beat each other up. I know they won't.
We're going to talk about the Alaska legislature.
Yeah, maybe they'll just agree that the Alaska legislature's got a problem.
Those are the guys that are messing it up.
That's right.
But then moving right along, because it's a full day Saturday, you've got some panels, and another one is Envisioning Early Anchorage from Fish Camps to 4th Avenue.
Yes.
And you have a great lineup on that panel, too. We have
Vic Fisher, Jim Blassengame, Steve Haycox, and Aaron Leggett. So these are people who are familiar with different aspects of our early history, the Dena'ina, the railroad, early planning. Vic was, of course, a member of the Constitutional Convention, and Steve is the paramount historian in this area. So, I think it should be a pretty exciting talk.
And then we've got another session, which is kind of leaps to present day, the 61st parallel in the 21st century. This is about diversity in Anchorage. And we've got Sherry Beretta, Eleanor Andrews, Arcana Mishra, and Neil Freed. And of course, you know, we're gonna hear from Charles Wolforth and his book. That's part of it. There's also the tour of the cemetery, which we had on another segment of the show
today. That happens the following day. We've been doing that for 21 years now.
Yeah.
And this time we're integrating it into the program. So Bruce and Audrey are going to take us by the grave sites of people who were critical to Anchorage's development.
As they put, famous and notorious. But anyway, we're almost done with our segment, so I want to let folks know July 9th is another event, separate from the symposium, when Preston Jones is going to take us to Anchorage in 1915.
Exactly. This is the program that celebrates the 100th anniversary, and it'll be at the museum on Thursday night, the 9th of July.
That's a don't miss. And then, of course, August 20th, the final event, and you go on vacation after this.
You betcha.
Jane Anvik and Dennis Wheeler from the city are going to take a look at the city's charter. The municipality is 40 years old. The charter was adopted 40 years ago. So they're just going to bring us up to date on that. So, Jim, we're out of time.
Thank you.
That was
the fastest symposium
summary that you've had. But thank you, Jim, for coming.
Everybody
in.
Needs to come.
Come
this
on.
Is your only time because we're not going to be around 100 years from now.
That's right. All right. Thanks a lot, Jim.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 9 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Hometown Alaska on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy, and we're here with another segment on our centennial program. I just want to remind you, you can't call in to today's show, but we have a fabulous show, and right now we have Donald Bricker in the studio with me, and I want to welcome you. Welcome, Donald.
Well, thank you, Kathleen.
So wonderful to have you. Donald's
my pleasure.
Best known as being an artist in town. He said it was okay if I said he was a Spinard artist in particular, and he is. And I checked out his resume. He's here because he's got a centennial project, but he's got a long background in art, including his BFA from Syracuse in 1974, then lands in Alaska and does all kinds of things, including, remember those wild salmon on parade? I saw some of those on your resume. He also edited an online art magazine for about 6 years, really just promoting arts in Alaska. It was called Art Scene AK, and he had subscribers. It was really a lively and supplemental publication to the arts in Alaska. And he's had a commercial graphics business. He's been an itinerant music teacher, essentially a Renaissance guy. But for the centennial, he chose log cabins. And so, Donald, tell us how this project came to be.
Well, the centennial program was designed to celebrate Anchorage's first 100 years. And they put out a request for grant proposals. And I had a personal connection with cabins from having lived in one myself for 10 years. And it just seemed to fit their concept of trying to commemorate what's good about Anchorage over the last 100 years.
Should include cabins.
The cabins are a really charming part of the early days of Anchorage. In fact, when the Tent City was torn down in Ship Creek that first year, the railroad came in and built two log cabins side by side right over the carcasses of the tents, basically.
Huh. So right after tents came log cabins. Yeah. And now, you did a lot of research on log cabins to get ready for the project. And I just kind of want to tap in a little bit to what you found out.
Oh, I was lucky to have an employee in the property appraisal department cut me off a little database of the addresses of buildings with log walls.
Mm-hmm.
And when I first got it, it had 1,000 records in it, more than 1,000.
More than 1,000 log cabins in the Anchorage Bowl, yeah.
I was a little overwhelmed.
Yeah. Hey, wait a minute. This is just my little centennial project. So how did you carve up that 1,000? What did you do?
Well, the municipality of Anchorage is very generous in the amount of territory that it brings under its taxing abilities, and that goes all the way from Girdwood through the Anchorage Bowl and out through Mirror Lake out to Klutna.
That's why there's 1,000, because it goes all around.
It's a big space.
Okay. But I want to tell folks that they can see this exhibit. It is an exhibit of artwork of cabins. It's at the Hughie Lewis Gallery right now on Northern Lights, and it will be there through June. So if you go, let's talk about what people will see when they get there.
Oh, sure. Well, I asked artists to paint cabins that they had picked out, met with the owners, and kind of in an effort to commemorate the buildings themselves. And my concern was that these cabins are actually kind of disappearing from Anchorage. There are very few new buildings being built in the last decade, like none.
Mm-hmm.
The new ones that are being built are superstructures, like giant, beautiful,
right.
Rich guy's log.
They're not quite like that single room log cabin that came after Tent City. Yeah.
So actually, a painting of a cabin may last longer than the cabin itself.
Right, right. And by the way, you had several winners. This was something of a competition.
Mm-hmm.
And you definitely wanted to tell us about those winners.
Right. The generosity of our sponsors made it possible for me to award some substantial cash honorariums, and the curator's choice went to Betty Atkinson, who really kind of understood where I was
coming from,
trying to do, and took the project into her heart, riding around Anchorage, looking at all the pictures at all the different cabins like I did all summer long.
Mm-hmm.
And then Monica O'Keefe went out and made a painting of the public use cabin out at the end of Eagle River Road.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Which is a mile off the road.
Uh-huh.
Beautiful painting of it in the wintertime. And Linda Bradyfar made a assembly of wooden slats in a log cabin pattern. Quilting pattern.
Very interesting. Really fun to see.
It was intriguing.
Yes. And then you did sketches of 8 of them that you particularly liked in Anchorage, and that's on one wall. Yeah.
Well, I spent last summer riding around on my bicycle and sketching cabins that were within reach of my bicycle from Spinard. And this was 8 of those sketches. Yeah, I filled in one wall. And I'm glad I put the one up there, because on the way over here this afternoon, I noticed that it's been torn down.
Oh, wow. Well, Donald, we are out of time, but I know you wanted to thank the Humanities Forum and the Rasmussen Foundation for support and the Centennial Commission. And I want to thank you for coming into Hometown Alaska and talking to us about your log cabin project. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Kathleen. I'd be happy to ramble on for hours, but that's
me
the
too.
Way some folks are.
Thank you, Donald. Thanks to all my guests this hour, Charles Woolforth, Todd Hardesty, Audrey and Bruce Kelly, Sandy Harper, Jim Barnett, and Donald Ricker. Next week, join host Charles Woolforth and Mayor-elect Ethan Berkowitz on Hometown Alaska. Thanks for tuning in with us today. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.